Good afternoon. You're listening to episode 7 of the Rugby Quizzes podcast. Myself, Dan, and Josh. Josh, how are we, mate?
I'm good, yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Listening.
Good.
Talking to you, and I'm watching the Wolverhampton 8:30. I've got Cafe Sydney.
Right.
4-1. So we'll see how he goes. But this isn't a horse racing podcast, it's Rugby League. Yeah, plenty to talk about, to be honest, Josh, isn't there? We've got. Obviously, Benji Marshall being dropped over in Australia. Bit of a shock, would you say?
I'd say so, yeah, Dan, because obviously, I won't say I've watched every game West have played this year, but I've watched majority, and he's been playing well this season. And obviously, the weekend he got beat by Gold Coast, who obviously haven't won for 12 months, but I don't think West Tigers played well as a team. That's not all down to Benji Marshall, obviously, but I think, obviously, we have Stuart Fielder on further on, and he'll tell you about Michael Maguire and stuff like that, but I really think he's either got a knock, myself, Dan, or something's going on behind the scenes, because I don't think Michael Maguire would drop a player of his quality because they've been beat by Gold Coast Titans.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you, but in my opinion, there's definitely something which is not necessarily suspicious, but he's not played anywhere near bad enough to get dropped. I actually think he's played quite well. I'll tell you what we'll do, Josh. We'll actually go straight over to Stuart Fielder now, and then we'll try and get an understanding of as to, you know, what he thinks and how Maguire thinks, and then me and you will have a bit of a chat about that. So this is obviously, you know, myself and Josh a bit earlier on with Stuart Fielder, and like I said, we'll come back to you in a second and tell you a bit about, you know, our opinion, and we'll discuss a few other things as well. So joining us now to talk a bit more about Michael Maguire is someone who's got, you know, direct experience of playing underneath him. That's Wigan, well, former Wigan player Stuart Fielder. Stu, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I am good, thank you.
Good.
How are you?
Good. Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, not bad.
Good,
the reason why we got you on, Stu, obviously, you know, we speak a lot doing the book and whatever. But Maguire's in the news a bit this week. He's dropped Benji Marshall now. It's took everyone a bit by surprise because Benji Marshall hasn't been playing bad at all. But there's a bit of a culture aspect to it, in terms of a lot of people think that the culture of West Tigers isn't quite right at the minute. And that's why, you know, Benji's been specifically cited by Maguire for that. What do you think of that, Stu? Is that something that you can see Michael Maguire doing?
Not to make an example, no, that just, it's not mad. He's a performance-based player.
Right.
So, and I'll be honest with you, I don't watch tons of rugby league. In fact, so I watch very little.
Yeah.
And so regarding Benji's performance, I can't sit here and say he's playing poorly. Or he's not. Certainly, if a player can be dropped and he's not performing, then the Mads will drop him. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you are. Only, basically, quite simply, it's the greater good. So sometimes there is a bit of rubbing that. So what I mean is, the player may be not playing, be performing as well in his position, but maybe he's the captain and he's performing and helping the team in other ways. So like I said, it's the great good. What is the most benefit to the team? And that's how Madge works. And one thing that I always appreciate from Madge, and I still do, is, you know, like anything, humans, animals, children, you put, you know, firm rules in place and you make it pretty clear what the standards are, and also what will happen positively and also negatively if you don't do it.
Yeah. Stu, tell us a bit about, you know, Michael Maguire, because obviously, you know, from when we speak, you rate him really highly. So just talk to us a bit about him as a person.
So some coaches, you know, some coaches struggle to leave rugby behind. And what I mean is, certainly on team dues, and that's just on its bit, you know, team dues and socialising and bringing the team together are a part of sport. They certainly are a part of rugby league. And trying to bury your head and pretend it doesn't happen, the boys don't have a drink, is just like, you know, pretending that Peter Pan exists.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is. That's just life. So you just accept it and go, as much as some people might want to pretend it isn't, I'm not sure why they would. You know, particularly considering, as long as the boys are maximising the performance, they're not drinking after games, and which will decrease recovery and the rest of it, you know, if they can, if they choose to drink, and that is a social thing for the, themselves or the team, and it's sometimes that positive. It is a positive, and what I mean there is, for instance, take example of Bradford in 2005. We'd lost, we were like fifth, sixth, seventh in the table. We had a team do, fancy dress, it galvanised the team, and we won 12 games straight. So, you know, there are positives to take from it on those kind of areas. But regarding, you know, regarding Magin and how he is, he sets the rules for me. It's not like, and also, I do have it on the flip side a little bit, so I've seen a lot of it. Pretty much, I always really appreciated what Madge did, and even though sometimes I totally agree with it. And one example of that is not just me sat here going, "Oh yeah, he was." We loved each other. We both just loved each other. He came out to mine for tea. I invited him round to mine for tea. No, that didn't happen. So I can remember after the Bradford game, 2013, he dragged me in the office and he was going mad, and I disagreed with him. He said, "Are you diving there?" I said, "No, I didn't dive. I'm telling you now." And he was like, "No, yeah, mate, you're diving. So my bad Aussie accent. I'll just hold my finger up my nose." And then he got, "All right." And then he got, "All right, mate, now." He got, Mike, you're diving, mate. Right. So that's how you do it. After spending quite a lot of time with Aussie. So no, he said I was diving. And to be fair, the Bradford game, even though we lost, structurally, defensively, offensively, I had a really good game. I can remember looking back and thinking, pretty harsh. And he dragged me in and he was saying, you're diving. And I said, no, I fucking want. I said, I'm telling you now. I said, you can say what you want. I said, drop me or not drop me. I said, I ain't backing down on it. I'm telling you what I was trying to do. And if you believe something else, I said, that's up to you. So my point there isn't that about me or whatever. It's just saying it wasn't always rosy. What the point I respected, and as you do for any leader, is firstly, you know, he didn't have a massive career in Oz, but what I mean is you could see he would have. I think injuries was a big part of Maz at the end of Maz's career. But certainly what I mean is regarding the tough stuff, there wasn't anything he wouldn't do that he was asking you to do.
Yeah.
You know, so leaders, all you should always lead by example. So he's one of them. And the second one, the respect of it is in, one, I started with it, he can leave rugby behind. So what I mean is some coaches can't. They go out and have team dues and this and that, and they can never really leave it behind. Whereas he could have a chat with you about anything. He was actually, he had a good sense of humour. So he could do all the other sides with it as well. But the main point was just the structure, the meticulous. Because, you know, in those wrestle sessions, we had some awful wrestle sessions. I mean, the first main week at Wigan, where everything kind of changed with the same squad as the year before, apart from Deakin. And then we won it and we're, you know, pretty much feared by many teams in 2010 because of how ruthless we are, how ruthless we were.
It is, and obviously, you know, myself and you speak about that quite a lot. And, you know, as you've mentioned, Australians, when they're over it, they tend to talk to each other quite a lot, don't they? And you sort of referenced that a lot of teams, the Aussies and the other teams said that, you know, in no short terms, that they just don't want to play, do they? And I suppose a lot of that you're putting down to Maguire and his standards.
Of course, the standards. And the honest bit is, it's ruthless, but then all due respect, it ain't tiddlywinks. You know, you're not going in, "Oh, we'll beat them by 20 and just be nice to them." No. I've always been firmly of that camp, is literally, you're going with that mindset. Listen, it is war. You're not going in there to injure anyone intentionally. You're not doing anything dirty intentionally. But you go in there and literally you are giving it all. It's you against them, mono on mono. And that's what rugby league is. It always has been. Trying to be nice. Obviously, you never try. And there was big frauds, we imagine, and the rest of it. So, you know, I can remember some of my mates, sort of Gilly and Leon, used to go mad about, "Oh, the target in the knees," and that. We never did. Never. So, The factual point there is anything above the knee and anything below that neck, apart from manipulating joints, you can go out of town. That's rugby league. If you're holding someone up and you wheel them round as you're taught to do, and you train hours on it, you wrestle them, getting them wrestling round, you two people join the tackle, you're moving them round. Because the simple bit is, what is your imperative there? What is your goal? You want to slow that tackle as long as possible. So if you can get 10 seconds, you're going to hold him up longer, work him round, and then put him down, and then you know, work your way off and all the rest of it. But if at that point, if there's a third man in, you can get in there and put a shot on him, well, you do. As brutal as it sounds, that's rugby.
Yeah.
You want them to think, you know, you want to put it on them and be like, you know, and that's perfect legal. You fly in there legally and do that, yeah, you should do, yeah. Because that's rugby league. And also, do you know what? He's going to probably think in next time, two things, isn't he? I didn't really fancy that.
I'll go down a bit quicker next time, is what
he's going to have doubt, and that's all you want to put into...
Yeah.
The world-class players, yeah. You know, they don't have doubt. They're tough as nails, and they'll crack on all day long. And they get hurt as well, and that's what happens in rugby league. Yet, what it does do in the weaker players is it puts doubt in. And also, you find, and I've seen it, you know, many times, people go missing. That's what your kind of goal is, to create as much disturbance in the opposition and to get you the defensive win. And that's what it is. And that's kind of Madge's mentality. But the great bit with him as a leader is he made it perfectly clear. So the problem is with some leaders is they have dynamic rules. So they put rules in place and then they let people bend them. And then, yeah. So it's like, you know, in any context, if driving the rules sometimes is 30 mile an hour there and then sometimes it's 40, all right, well, when's it 30? When's it 40? You can't have rules that bend. If they are quite, obviously, in some contexts, then no, there are slightly flexible things, aren't there? Thus, a rule that bends rather than breaks. But the point with him is he made things clear. He was perfectly transparent with it, and you know, he's a good bloke with it.
So them standards that, you know, you refer to, that are they everyone who plays under him in that camp are fully aware of, you know, what's expected on a daily basis and on a match day? Everyone understands.
Yeah,
that,
they would be. Yes, yeah. So certainly game days, as you'd do the same, and the Aussies, what we're doing, are different. They'll be doing, you know, they'll be doing training in the week. They'll be doing. Video before the game on their opposition. They'll be doing video before the game on their opposition, as in the team, all that kind of stuff. So they'll have all that stuff, and they'll also have the previous game's stats and the rest of it, and they'll have the areas they need to improve in. They'll have the reviews where they sit down with the nearest coach and the head coach and the rest of it. So they'll have the targets, they'll have all these kind of things. They'll have the percentages of wins and offensive wins, which is with the ball, and defensive wins and that kind of stuff. Have all these targets, and then I suppose right. You can start dropping players if they're not performing, if you've got a really good fit squad and the rest of it. And the honest bit is, with a lot of squads, even in the RL, they have a limited amount of people. And if you don't have a massive amount of people in that position, then hey, unless you know a player there is better than none, sometimes, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, and one thing that sort of. He has brought in. So Josh Reynolds is the player who's come in, another, you know, good halfback, quality state of origin player and whatever. So I think that might have made the decision easier. But the reason why it's come a bit of a surprise to me is that, you know, obviously I watched the NRL quite a bit. He's not been playing bad, Benji Marshall. I think he's probably got a couple of man of matches out of four games. So that's what I think has really made people quite surprised by it.
I mean, and that's the thing as well, is you just never know what's going on in the background, do you? So as much as, I mean, considering the NRL is like the Premier League over here, you haven't, you know, rugby league isn't that way over here, but certainly football, you don't hear anything about football because everyone knows how much the media is and how hostile the media are in some respects and the rest of it. It's the same in the NRL. So I remember one time he was on the test in 2006 and there was some journalist appeared out of nowhere and was pretending not to be a journalist and was. And he knew it was... I think the point there is they're pretty brutal with it and they know all the stuff that's said here and all and everywhere, and regarding Madge with it, he has a standard. So my original point was, you know, you just don't know what's going on in the background, and so you just don't know what's going on, how much he's performing, what's going on in his life. Sometimes dropping the player is what they need to give them that spark to play better. Basically, kick up the ass. So sometimes you drop that player in the blight, and they'll start to play better. And you just don't know what's going on in the background, do you?
Yeah, no, exactly right. Yeah, exactly. Have you been in that position yourself, Stu, where you know you've been out of form possibly? And...
Not with Madge. Certainly 2009, I can remember saying to Nobby, you know, I was probably I'm pretty sure I was depressed for many years after my mum died. Playing terribly, the team, you know, was playing terribly as well for years at Wigan. And I can remember saying to another one year, drop me, please, I don't want to play. And I can remember the phone call and he said, well, it's Eamon, you are Eamon O'Carroll and the defensive side you're doing kind of probably about the most. He said, and that's an area we're struggling with, so you're still playing. And that happens regarding with under Madge. I only had one real year under Madge because then 2011 I was injured. Just good standards with it. We had a great team that year. We were all performing. And back to a previous point about Madge. If you look at also, you know, some changing things around and whatever. Look what he did for Sam Tompkins. So Sam Tompkins under Nobby was playing half, and it was Madge who put him to fullback.
So, yeah,
got the best out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So sometimes these things are that, and the main bit. I think my main point there is the underlying bit is no one knows what's going on in that, but in the actual truth, what's going on at that club. So you just don't know why they've dropped him. Is he got an injury? Is he not? That's the thing. You're not going to know because they're not going to tell you.
Yeah, exactly right. And obviously, you know, just a quick word on the actual play then, Stu. So in 2006, obviously one of your best games, which, you know, we speak about a lot, is the West Tigers game. That obviously featured an informed Benji Marshall. Give us a couple of words on him if you watch.
He didn't play in that game, did he? No.
Did he not?
He was injured. So he missed it.
Right. But you'd have come up against him in New Zealand, I'm assuming, at some point.
No, yeah. I mean, it's quite a long time ago. I mean, last time I was international was 2010, so certainly a while ago. But around those years, you know, we were certainly preparing to play for him. Like, yeah, he's a world-class player, isn't he? You see some of his videos, you see some of the things on YouTube or whatever, some of the flick pass and that. He's a great player. I mean, one of those world class players, and a world class player isn't the small minority, isn't it? One of those top players that can win games, change games, and he's literally, you know, one of the absolute best.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Definitely. Well, listen, Stu, I really appreciate you coming on. Obviously, short notice. I think I messaged you half an hour ago. So, again, really appreciate it.
No worries.
And,
yes,
we'll catch up tomorrow, mate. Yeah?
All right, mate.
Bye. Take care.
Cheers, Stu. Bye-bye.
So that was Stuart Fielding earlier on. So, Josh, obviously, after listening to him, what do you think? What do you think is happening with Benji Marshall?
Going off for... Stuart said there that Magsy's obviously he's a successful man, isn't he? He won the stuff with Wigan and obviously got the best out of Sam Tompkins, and I just feel like by the sounds of what Stuart's saying, he will drop a player but also won't drop a player off just if they're playing bad. He will keep a player in if they're doing stuff right for the team, and I think Benji is doing something right for West at the moment. Obviously weekend, none of the West Tigers players played well at all. So I can't see he's dropped him off weekend's performance myself. I think definitely an injury in there or something behind the scenes maybe with personal reasons. But I don't think he's dropped him off the form over the weekend.
No, I agree, Josh. So the start of the year, I think, I think he probably got 3 Man of Steel points in the first game this season when they got up over, I think it was Canterbury. And then obviously, you know, the weekend before last as well. He got that good win against Cronulla, and I thought he were one of the better players against Cronulla as well. So you're potentially looking at someone who's got 5, possibly even 6 Dally M points already to get dropped off the back of a Gold Coast Titans game where, like you said, there's not a single player in that West Tigers team that sort of stood up and played well. So
I look at it, Dan. You look at Benji Marshall, he's massive, and he's always been my idol, Benji Marshall. And
yeah.
I remember I was about 6 or 7, it was definitely England, when we played him at the Galt Farm Stadium in Huddersfield. I can't think what year it was. And I was mascot that day, and I've always been massive in New Zealand. My granddad swears I was born to be in New Zealand, and obviously I grew up loving the Akin and obviously loving Benji Marshall, and I went into the Gal Farm Stadium to be mascot that day, and obviously they have the two main mascots, one for England who then puts the England kit on, and one for New Zealand who puts the New Zealand kit on, and everyone was fighting over the England. Everyone put their hands up for when they said who wants to be the England main one, and obviously, unfortunately, only one could be it. But I just sat in the corner and I never even put my hand up for the England one. And as soon as you asked the New Zealand one, my hand was up first, and everyone was like, you didn't put your hand up for the England. I said, yeah, I don't support England, I support New Zealand. But obviously, as I've got older, Dad, obviously, you support your country. And when I walked out with Benji Marshall, mate, he's like a prop forward. The size on him is ridiculous, yeah. Absolutely ridiculous. But going back to, obviously, what we're saying, I don't think he's dropped in for the way they played and anything like that. I think he's got maybe a little niggle, and because it's a player you want in your squad because of the experience he carries, mate. Benji Marshall's got the skill to turn the game within a click. And I think, obviously, Mag, the experienced coach he is, I think he knows that Benji Marshall could win him a game within a blink, or change a game within a blink. I really think it's just a niggling injury, and they've dropped him because of that.
Yeah, possibly. The other thing I'm thinking is, and obviously with the change in the way the game's played over there now, you've got, you know, Benji Marshall, like, you know, he's not 21 anymore. His legs are going. He's more of a structured player now. But obviously, the way that the six again rules come in and stuff, it doesn't, you know, the fast rucks don't really sort of benefit your structured player. So Benji Marshall 10 years ago, it'd be perfect for him. Whereas now, he's not as much as a runner of the ball, whereas obviously Josh Reynolds is. So potentially that's another reason in terms of, you know, just how they want to play this week. Does Josh Reynolds possibly suit them a bit more? I'm not sure, but it's a strange one for me, Josh. Like you said, I'd like to think, you know, that there is a little bit of an injury there or something, because to just drop Benji Marshall for any other reason isn't a good move, if you ask me. And I think that if it's not for an injury or something like the way they want to play this week with Josh Reynolds being a bit more on the ball, I actually fear that there's something quite serious going on in terms of, you know, he's not happy at the club, and obviously he's been chopped around Super League a couple of times. So I'd hate to think, as much as I'd love to see him in Super League, I'd hate to think that there's a bit of an issue going on under this, you know, behind the scenes there.
He's had one game against Justin Holbrook, mate, and he's broken.
Exactly, Holbrook's broken.
I was absolutely made up watching that game, Dan, and there was limbs in my bedroom watching that game. I thought it was in the West Ham at Saints. Like, just done a last minute drop goal try against Wigan, and I was jumping around the room like it was a Saints game, and I put my emotions out there that I was made up for Holbrook and the Titans. I just want to see Gold Coast Titans play for 80 minutes, Dan, because I've watched Gold Coast a lot this year, and I haven't seen a Gold Coast Titans team play for 80 minutes. I've either seen a Gold Coast Titans play for 15 to 20 minutes in the first half and then 15 to 20 minutes in the second half. And that is exactly what they done on the weekend. The first 20 minutes, mate, was absolutely appalling. They went 12-0 down. And the last 25 minutes of the first half, they didn't do nothing wrong. The first 20 minutes of the second half, mate, they was poor again. And the last 25 minutes of the second half, they come to, and they ended up winning the game. But that's a positive sign already, what Holbrook's brought into Gold Coast, because the Holbrook team playing for 80 minutes could get excited for Gold Coast.
100%, yeah. And obviously, you know, when you're watching the Gold Coast, one thing that sort of got me excited for them is the fact that, you know, the players all seemed excited to have won the game, and they all seemed excited even when they went down by 12 points on two occasions. You know, you've seen Saints do that a bit last year, and you know, there's sort of a togetherness about Justin Holbrook's teams, isn't there? And that's evident that that's the Titans as well. And one other thing is the prop forward, Fotowaker, I think he played 8 at the weekend. I think he's 20 years old, mate, and he's playing like that. He's going to be some player, isn't he?
He is, mate. And you look at the... I remember texting you, and I'm not the biggest fan of Ash Taylor, and I remember texting you saying that I think... when he threw the pass for the interception for West Tigers' second try. And I thought the best thing Holbrook needs to do is get rid of Ashley. Ashley switched it on, mate. And for me, he did win the game for Gold Coast. I think his guidance around the pitch. But I fear that a player at Saints is going to get reeled into the Holbrook eye in the Gold Coast. And I think when Morgan knows, I think he could be a perfect fit for the Gold Coast with him. Obviously, this will go on to our next topic for underrated players. And I think talking about Morgan Knowles, mate, for his age and the skill he's got and the rugby brain he has, I think he's the most underrated player in the Super League. But I think I hate to see a player leave Saints, but I'd love to see Morgan Knowles to go and give it a crack over the NRL.
I agree. It's similar to that Luke Thompson situation as well, isn't it? Where you've got someone who, you know, obviously, as a Saints fan, you'd hate to leave, but as a rugby league fan and as a fan of him as a person, you can't wait to see him pull on a Bulldogs jersey and see how he goes on over there. And Morgan Knowles, you know, we both think really high of him. And when you text me the other day saying, obviously, Morgan Knowles to replace Jairo, it's not something I'd thought about, but my word, it's unfortunately a realistic option, isn't it? So
obviously, Gold Coast Titans have always been leaving now. Is it 12 months? It got announced last year that he was leaving.
It was around this time last year, wasn't it? Yeah.
So soon as I seen that race, and obviously Holbrook was at Saints at the time, and obviously no one knew Holbrook was going to go. And as soon as Holbrook goes to Gold Coast, and then I'm sat there and I'm thinking, he's leaving at the end of this year. And I just thought Morgan Knowles is the perfect fit. He's young, he's skillful with the ball, he's played under Holbrook for 2.5 years. I can see it happening, mate, I'll be honest, I can see it happening.
No, I can myself, I'll be honest, I can. That, to be fair, Josh, one of the things I wanted to speak to you about tonight is sort of what we'll come on to now with you mentioning that. Obviously, with lockdown, there's not a lot of, you know, rugby league, there's no rugby league in the UK at the minute. I want to go through like the Super League teams and have a look at recruitment. And if you're the recruitment coach of, you know, all 12 Super League teams, who you'd look to bring in for next year. So we'll start with St. Helens, shall we? Why, obviously, you know, we're both fans of St. Helens and we're talking about them now. So obviously, we know Luke Thompson's moving on. Zeb Tay's coming out of contract. Dom Peru's coming out of contract. Kyle Amo, I think Louis coming off contract as well. So you've got the potential to either free up quite a lot of cap space to go and buy new players, or as St. Helens do really well, is to retain players. Give us a couple of players that, you know, if you are Eamon McManus or Mike Rush, you're looking for next year, Josh.
Drop forward, I go for Robbie Mulhern.
Yeah.
Hulk, I just think, is he 26 now?
Possibly. 25, 26, yeah.
I think definitely that's not for replace anyone else other than Luke Thompson, personally. And I think I'd give new deals to Dom Peru, James Bentley hopefully signs this new deal. I'd look at offering Big Al a good little deal to keep him at the club, because I think him and Rob Mulhern could, with Matty Lees at behind him, it could go well. I think we need a second row down myself. I think I'd definitely offer Peru a new deal, but obviously Zeb Tino and LMS, I think I can't see Zeb saying, and I think Louis will get a 12-month deal myself. I don't think his season will be over, but I'd love Saints going for Ben Curry. It got mentioned years ago about him coming to Saints, and obviously the ACL injury's coming. I know he's had a few problems with the knees, but Ben Curry for me will suit a Saints team, just like Joe Greenwood, basically. An actual line runner coming off the end of Johnny Lomax. I think I'd love to see that. And obviously, you know, I'm a massive fan of Ucker, Dan and halfback, and we have this argument each week. I personally think Theo Farge is a hooker, but Saints playing at the halfback position. But I want Saints to really sign a hooker, to be fair. Yeah, I think Aaron Smith is good, but I don't think he's ready yet to make that number 9 easy himself. And I think Robbie will start to slow down next season.
Yeah,
I'd love us. I think I'm living on dreamland with this one, Dan. But I'd love it to happen. But Joey Lussick, I'd love it. I would love it to happen. I think the type of player he is, he's got that a bit about him. He's got a bit of kicking game. He can tackle, he can run. And I think if we could sign Joey Lussick up for 2-3 years and give a bit of guidance to Aaron Smith as well, I think that could bring Aaron Smith on leaps and bounds as well.
To be fair, mate, Joey Lussick's an absolute shout. I tend to agree. So Roby, he's an absolute quality player, and for me, he is up there with Kieran Cunningham. There's genuinely no split in the two of them, I don't think. One of the best players that Saints have ever had is James Roby.
I don't get tied into this argument, you know.
No, you can't. I don't think you can.
The Kieran and the Robes, my argument towards that is when Kieran played, the game was tough and not as quick. So Roby's Kieran's type. You just look at the type, the way hookers are built now. Kieran, Terry Newton, Jimmy Laws, they was all stocky fellas and
big, yeah,
tough fellas. And you look at the way Roby, Darrell Clark, Paul McShane, Danny Houghton, Michael McLaurin, and look at the way all them are built now.
They're a lot
slimmer because the game's quicker. So I think a prime Roby wouldn't last in Kieran's prime, and I think a prime Cunningham wouldn't cope in Roby's prime, if you do get what I mean there. So I think there's no arguments between it. Obviously, people are going to have the favourite, but I don't think you can compare the two together at all, because they both played the game at different parts of the career, and obviously it was a lot tougher when Kieran played, but slow, and now it's still tough, but a lot more quicker.
Yeah, I agree. It's not something where I'd ever try and split the two of them for reasons like you said there. You know, as Saints fans, again, we're just extremely lucky to have both, aren't we? So if someone came up to me and said, do you want £1 million or £1,000,000? I won't really be too bothered which one they give me, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, for me, so obviously just come back to St. Helens a bit. So Ben Curry, without doubt, you know, Zeb Tay is an absolute quality player. And I don't think he's any worse now than he was when we got him in 2017. In fact, I'd probably say he's better. But, you know, I think he's, what, 62 is he next year? So
I've got it down at 63.
Yeah, rightly. So, you know, from a point of view, obviously, Zeb Tay, if he thinks he can go around again next year, then fair enough. You know, I probably would give him an extra 12 months. But I think for him, he's probably at the point in his life where his body's had enough, and he's a physical player as well. It's not like he's a centre or a standoff or anything. He's a hard running back rower who, you know, does probably what 30-40 tackles a game and between 10 and 15, you know, hit ups a game. So he's not someone who shirks work. So that naturally takes a toll on your body. So Ben Curry is the obvious replacement there, like you said, the Josh River, you know, a natural left edge player, young, English, played with Johnny Lomax at international level. So, he'd be someone that I'd agree with. Robbie Mulhern is a great shout, Josh. He's, you know, prop forward who would, you know, fit really well into that Saints pack. He's mobile. Obviously, he's Luke Thompson's mobile, so we need someone who's going to match that. Matty Lees will obviously step up and play bigger minutes and a bigger role next year as well. So Robbie Mulhern on a modest salary would be a great, you know, great shout. And the other one, you know, Joey Lussick is fantastic, mate. I'd be more than happy if we was, you know, we was able to get Joey Lussick on a 2-year deal, something like that. I'd be buzzing with it.
Maybe we could throw Zeb Taylor, LMS and Kyle Amo with a swap deal. Just to get Joey Lussick, mate.
I was going to ask you about Amo, so what would you do with Amo? He's the hardest one to make a decision on, I think. What would you do?
Oh, Stan, you fucked me on the spot here. Nice words. Right. My thoughts on Kyle. He come in 2014, best prop forward. We probably that year for us. I'll be honest, I don't think we would have actually got to the grand final if it wasn't for Kyle. 2015, it's never the same after you win a grand final, really, is it? Unless you're very a fit team and a skillful team. But I think Kyle went downhill quickly at Saints, and I think 2016, I was very disappointed in 17. was disappointed. But you know what? Credit where credit's due. Dan, I think last year, I think Kyle Amo stepped up again.
He did, yeah.
He was to the old Kyle Amo. But going to the back end, the business end of the season, mate, I think Kyle Amo actually, I went to one game and I think I had to come off the game saying, Kyle Amo's just done more work than Luke Thompson and Alex Wormley that game. And
yeah.
You think it? Kyle Amo's a different type of prop. Alex Wormley's your prop who will run through a bit wall. Kyle Amo's your, yeah, should we say, your fancy prop, bit of footwork and a bit of a tip on pass at the line. And I think that worked towards the back end of last year with Kyle. And hopefully this season he can continue that. But Kyle Amo, mate, I think I'd let him go myself. And I can't think of enough for what he's done at Saints. Obviously, he's been successful at Saints and stuff like that. But surely, unless he might turn around, Dan, and he might lower the wage, but like it's a short career, isn't it? So they need as much money as they can. I think realistically, I can see him going back to Wakefield. I think finish his career off at Wakefield, and hopefully, he might go back up to Cumbria and finish his career off at Cumbria.
Yeah, is it Whitehaven? I think
Whitehaven.
I tend to be fair, Josh. I tend to agree with you on everything you just said there. So he is that, you know, that nimble footwork prop forward.
Obviously, if you let Kyle go, obviously you've got Matthews at Saints now. Who else have you got? Shame you've got Matthews, Jack Ashworth.
So you've got, yeah, obviously Alex Wormsley.
You've got
Callum Hazard's in the middle. He's obviously a bit younger. I think he's only played a couple of games. So
obviously you've got to look at the senior headstand, because you're going to have the same problem Saints had years ago. You're going to have young quality players but no experience. And I think Saints, obviously losing Luke Thompson, if we get Robbie Mulhern in, well, I'm saying if we get him in, that's who I'd love to see us get him. We don't know who Saints are going to go in for. But I definitely look at, if they don't sign Kyle Amo on, would you sign another prop? So is it not worth just keeping Amo on for one more season?
But this is what I'm thinking. And one of the things that would help Kyle Amo is obviously the reel that is being discussed in terms of bringing back in, which is the six again player, which just, it can't help the speed of the rope because, you know, the penalty is a lot greater than a penalty with the six again tackle. So if we do go that way and obviously the game moves to that faster pace as done in the NRL, then that suits Kyle Amo because he's not getting three and four people in with the high wrestle. He's hitting every tackle with a two-man tackle with the footwork and fast ruck speed, which is what he's good at. And if we can get that for 12 more months and again on a modest salary or a reduced salary, shall we say, because, you know, I think especially when he first came in, he was one of our high earners and rightly so at the time. But I think if we can get Kyle Amo to do what he's done historically over his in-form periods over the next 12 months, then I'd jump at that. But like you said, if we can't, then we need to go and get probably two props, to be honest. If we're losing Luke Thompson and Amo, I think Jack Ashworth looks like he's heading off to Castleford, so we need two really good props to accompany, obviously, Wormsley and Lees, with Louis possibly jumping in if he signs a new contract and Hazard coming through as well. So two props. You've got Robbie Mulhern being a strong possibility for one of them. And your second one, where'd you look? I'm trying to think of players that are going to be available.
Super League's come to a point now where teams are signing players and like to James Bentley now. I'm really, really worried about this one. I rate James Bentley massively, and I think Saints have got to do absolutely everything, just like they did to keep Tommy Mack and Alex Wormsley and Luke Thompson at Saints. Obviously, the Luke Thompson, they couldn't do any more. But this is a player Saints need to absolutely do everything to keep hold of in James Bentley, because the kid's got a massive future, mate. You've said it yourself, utility-wise. He's just there to play rugby. You could ask him, James, you're playing fullback today, he'd give it 110%. James, you're playing prop forward today, he'd give it 110%.
Yeah, he would,
on the bench, okay, I'll give it 110% when I get on. But I think if obviously Zeb LMS don't sign and Don don't sign new deals. Maybe the Ben Curry. Do you go in for Ben Curry because you've got Bents? Maybe that frees up then a bit of cap space to get two props in. Two quality props, should we say, instead
and
of
just put Bentley in that left edge second row.
Basically, just go from there because I think Peru definitely will sign a new deal.
100%. If we don't have Peru next year, I'd be very, very surprised.
But the farm is it, mate. Would you be?
I'd be surprised if Saints didn't fight for him. Obviously, Saints can get more money elsewhere and wants to go home then. Fair enough. But I'd be surprised if Saints did not put a lot of effort into to keep him.
Saints fight for every player. We know that. And I just feel like Tom Perumas, I remember when he first came in, everyone was like, who's this fella? And everyone was calling for his head. And Holbrook come in there, as he did with a lot of players, got this magic wand out and just Dom Perú turned into another Dom Perú, basically. Is this the same player who we've been watching for the last year or so? I think he's been our most consistent player for a couple of seasons now.
Yeah, he has, yeah. Defensively as well, not just with the ball, but defensively he's
He loves to get off in the face, doesn't he? He's like another favourite player I love. In fact, there's another second round down who we could go and get. Willie Heiser from Wigan. Oh, man.
He's older than Zeb, isn't he?
I know, mate, but what a player. What a player Willie Heiser is. Obviously, we're going to speak about underrated players, and he's another one who's on my list, Willie Heiser is. I think, what a player.
Yeah. Well, in fact, Josh, speaking of underrated players, we'll go on to that bit now. So it was something I thought of just earlier on. So I was reading through Channel 9 and he was on about underrated players. And Jai Arrow obviously actually came up and he's signed for Souths next year, which obviously, like you said there earlier on, opens the door for someone like Morgan Knowles. Now, who in Super League historically and at the minute do you think are them underrated, them unsung hero sort of thing? Who stands out, Josh?
I've only got eight down because when you asked me, I was having me tea and I was thinking, fucking
eight. Out. Eight's a lot, mate.
I'm thinking, Jesus. We're doing a podcast in an hour and a half. I've got to think of underrated players. I don't know how many I've got past, to be fair. I think I've only got three past players in it. I've gone for Zeb Taylor. I think Zeb Taylor at Catalan. Outstanding.
In his Catalan years, yeah.
Went back home. Zeb Taylor at Saints, even better.
Yeah.
Possibly. I think we definitely got the better deal with
I agree, yeah.
Another one for me, Dan, that's massive. Another Saints player, obviously. But obviously at Wakefield, Matty Ashurst, massive.
Yeah.
Just unlucky he had a bit more quality in front of him at Saints. And then another Saints player. Another second row. Josh Jones, mate, I think. What a player. Massively underrated. He's another one, Dan, as well. Apparently he's upset at Hull.
He's shocked himself around. I'd take him back in a heartbeat.
100%. I'm gonna get called there biased here. I've got another Saints player, but also he has played for other teams. Adam Quillen, mate. Adam Quillen, I think, what a player. The most underrated player I would say I've seen. To be fair, yeah, I think come to Saints, no one knew who he was. He played the position which was cursed for Saints that year, which was fullback.
We had eight fullbacks we had that year, didn't we?
I think he come off the plane, Mike Rushing in, and Matt Manners had bubble wrap, and they wrapped him straight up, and it was just his head. and his jaw could move, and I think they fed him through a straw, so he was fit. And he scored a hat-trick on his debut, and I was sad to see Adam leave, to be fair, but I think when he's done at OKR, he's done well. Obviously, we've touched up on Morgan Allsworth. I think he's another one massively underrated. Just, I don't have to say any more about Morgan other than watch him play if you don't believe me. And if you don't think he's underrated, I don't think you know rugby league, to be fair. and this is obviously an interesting one, Dan, which I think you'll be like, yeah, fair enough. Heap Kale, or is it Hep Kale? Or
Hep Kale is Kale. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He is class. Yeah.
He's another one. I think he's 69, but I'd take him as a second platform. And another player, right fullback, played for Castleford, Luke Dawn, I think.
Luke Dawn, yeah.
Massively underrated, I think. His kicking game, he could change a game, but this one for me, Dan, I think he's been overlooked by a lot of big clubs, massively underrated. And Craig Hall, I think for what he does, I think it was it last year he signed for Hull Cardiff or the year before.
Yeah.
He scored two full length tries, and I thought, I've always rated Craig Hall and I've always known he was underrated, but if he scored two full length tries, I was thinking, wow. I was no absolute, like a massive club not signed him up, like you said, your Wigan, your Warrington, your Leeds. Why have none of them actually entertained him? It's interesting to see why they haven't. And obviously, he's just left Hull Cardiff to sign. Is it Featherstone he's signed for?
I think he's at Fev now, yeah.
And I think he's too good to play. No disrespect to Featherstone, but Craig Hall's too good to play in the Championship. He's got to be in Super League. Got to be in Super League.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there, to be honest. He's a cracking player. Lee Breer's brother-in-law, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, it is, mate, yeah. Obviously, Lee's married to Vicky Hall, and they've got a rugby background because Craig's and Vicky's dad, I think, played. He was at Hull Cardiff when they won the Challenge Cup. I think he might have captained Hull Cardiff when they won the Challenge Cup, but obviously, massive rugby league family. Obviously, Lee Breer's massively rugby league family, but obviously Lee Breeze, mate, I wouldn't say he was underrated, but I think Lee Breeze never had enough respect put on his name, to be fair, yeah, because of people judge Lee off what he won as a player, but I always say you can't judge a player off what they win. You've got to judge a player off what they do for the team.
And exactly right, yeah.
Year in, year out, Lee Breeze, he played with shit, damn, for me. He did play with shit at Warrington for a long part of his career. And
yeah,
I think Lee was loyal to Warrington really because he could have easily stayed at Saints. Obviously, that's what we would have wanted, but things don't work out, and it's probably his best move that he went to Warrington. But he could have easily left Warrington, mate, to go and bigger his career. Surely he had offers from Australia or whatever because he was more than good enough.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of same. So obviously, you mentioned Willie Iser early on. I went Willie Iser. Couple of others. I went with Danny Craven at Widnes. Now, he's been at Widnes for probably 11, 12 years now. Was with him in the Championship before they got the Super League franchise. Played with him through, obviously, Super League, and he's still there now. But for me, the one thing that stands out about Danny Craven, and anyone who watches him, I'm sure will agree, is that left foot kicking game is just... He has it on string at times, and he's been unlucky with injury. He's missed quite a lot of rugby for injury and stuff, but, you know, great player. And I think had he been in a different team at a different time during his career in Super League, then his career could have been a lot different. Second one I went for, actually another Widnes player, actually, well, spent time at Widnes, was Danny Tickle. Just a great player. Obviously, starting off at Wigan. Got shopped around, went to, I think he played at Widnes, he played Cass, Hull, so he's had a bit of a career hopping about, but wherever he's played, he's done a good job. He's played in that back row, obviously played in the middle as well as he got older, but, you know, had a left foot kicking game, not many forwards, you know, kick it anywhere near as many goals as him, but a real structured player who, you know, ran good lines and defensively was, you know, extremely sound. And my third one is a bit of a weird one, really. So Trent Barrett. Now, obviously, the impact he had at Wigan was just phenomenal. Now, I think that actually gets forgotten quite a lot, just how good his time at Wigan was. So although everyone sort of appreciates that he's a quality player, I just think his impact on that Wigan team sort of goes underestimated a bit. And I remember one particular game is the 07 playoff when they came down from 30-0 to beat Bradford at Old Sutton. Yeah. 33-32, I think it finished, but just absolute quality. And he took the game by a scruff of the neck. And, you know, without Trent Barrett, they don't get anywhere near Bradford that day, in my opinion. And my last one is someone who, again, you know, spent a bit of time at St. Helens, but probably for what he does at Salford, it's Mark Flanagan.
Massive
fan of Mark Flanagan. Yeah, Flash, yeah. To this day, I don't think there's... He's a player. In fact, yeah, I'll say it. I don't think there's any player defensively better than Mark Flanagan in English Rugby League. I'd even say Robert. I honestly say Mark Flanagan over any English player as a defensive player. And with the ball, he has got hands, and you know he can trundle the ball up. He's not known for his attack, don't get me wrong, but he does a job in attack and he's solid in what he does. But defensively, there's not a person I'd want there.
Can I stop you there?
Go for it.
He's not good in attack. I've just mentioned 2014 Grand Final there. That year, he played halfback. John Turner, Paul Williams. Mark Flanagan won us a Grand Final.
100% he did, mate. Yeah, 100% he did. In fact, he gets that shout just for that alone. But I actually forgot about that. He played halfback.
You played from the back with Flanagan in attack.
But I think the other thing as well, the one thing that sort of stands out with Mark Flanagan, and again, not just on the field, but you listen to him on, he obviously does his podcast himself, and you know whenever he gets interviewed, he speaks with absolute class. I think to have someone like that in your camp as a team, you know, you could have 17 Benji Marshalls or 17, you know, Andrew Johns, whatever it may be, but you need a diverse group of people, and you need leaders within that group, and you need them leaders who aren't even seen as leaders. You need them silent culture players who sort of drive standards. And for me, that epitomises Mark Flanagan, someone who, you know, his time at St. Helens wouldn't have been on great money, you know, probably, you know, 60, 70 grand. If he was earning that, was probably what people would expect him to be earning, but played well above his value. And, you know, whilst people externally might not look up to him as a sort of a player, if you're a young player and you're training and you see someone like Matt Flanagan who's, you know, hitting, you know, 50, 60 tackles a game at times, and he's getting dropped and then coming back in and just carrying on doing his job, and he's doing his job well, they're the people that I think young players need to see to appreciate what they need to achieve just to get into the team. So them standards of you know, work come before anything else. And
to get into the point at rugby league, then I think all you've got to do is to start to be a good rugby league player. Get your basics right, and that's what Mark does. Mark does all his basics right. He's not this fancy player. You get fancy players, mate, but fancy players are on another level. But I think to be a good rugby league player and to be noticed, just do your basics. I'd rather have a team full of Mark Flanagan's, mate, than a team, say, full of Ben Barber's, for example.
Yeah.
Ben Barber's, the quality was down there, but there was a lot of...
comes with baggage, doesn't
he? Yeah. There was, mate. There was a lot of, like, points at his game where he could improve massively. His defence, for one, under a high ball, for two. Where Mark Flanagan, his defence, I would say he probably could catch a ball. He could run a ball, he could kick a ball. So I think get your basics right, and then you start to look at, man, if I can do the fancy stuff, that's a positive. But Mark Flanagan does his basics and gets noticed for it.
Yeah. Quick story about Mark Flanagan as well, actually. Remember Piggy Riddell?
Yeah, mate. Piggy.
The hooker who did the kick at the grand final. Pointing his hand.
Mad kicking.
Yeah. Well, so I think it was his last year. I think Riddell and Flanagan both left Wigan at the end of 2009. Obviously, I think Riddell went to Flanagan went over to West Tigers, and I can't remember what Riddell did. In fact, no, I think Riddell stayed on, actually. But anyway, it was
he did make mad one. I think he played in the 2010 Grand Final, I think.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that was the kick, actually, wasn't it? Yeah, so Matt Riddell stayed on, and obviously Matt Flanagan went off to the Tigers.
I thought it was a streaker, the way he was.
He's not built for kicking either, is he? Let's be honest. But it was Mad Monday for Wigan, and obviously they're all on the hill and whatever. You, and they got kicked out, so Wigan got kicked out the week before the Grand Final. Obviously, it was St. Helens and Leeds in the Grand Final. Piggy's obviously gone up to Madge and said, listen, we're going to pull a prank on Flanagan. Flanagan was a kid at the time, probably 19, 20, and just signed for the Tigers. but basically rang up Mark Flanagan and pretended to be one of the England selectors. And you know, Mark Flanagan was coming off the bench for Wigan at the time. He, unlikely to believe that he was getting picked for England, but anyway, he's believed it. He's rang his family, he's crying and everything. So imagine the end. Imagine the end after telling him to, you know, to pull the joke short because he was in hysterics, like he was buzzing. But
no wonder he left Wigan in 09.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but you know, he come to think of it, it's quite sad, really, that he's never got that international recognition because, you know, unfortunately for him, England in the middle are extremely blessed. You know, Burgess, O'Loughlin, and obviously Graham's played 13. Luke Thompson's played 13. So there's always been world class players in front of him.
But surely he's got Welsh in him.
A bit of Irish. Flanagan's a
bit of Irish.
He sounds quite Irish. Flanagan.
A bit of Scottish. He must have.
I'd invest in that. It's World Cup next year. Earn yourself a few quid, Mark.
Maybe a bit of Papua New Guinea, mate. I think they intend to. He played in Australia, so there's definitely relatives. if you're listening, Mark, just take it in mind. Ireland, Scotland or Wales. Look deep into your family, there must be somewhere.
I think with the name Flanagan, no one's going to question a bit of Irish heritage, surely not.
No.
Just chuck an O in front of it. Marco Flanagan, that'll get you in.
Grow a tash and diet ginger, you'll be okay.
Get some Guinness. That's all Lou McCarthy did, didn't it?
Yeah, and time. He's born and bred Cumbria, then he's Irish.
Dublin Cumbria.
Amazing.
What else have we got, Josh? St. George. I want to talk a bit about St. George, actually.
You know what, mate? Yeah, because this is interesting. Sorry, Dan, I'm going to
go for it again. Yeah.
Obviously, they've not started the best, have they? And they've got such a young squad. And I hope the only good what comes out of this is James Gray turns around and says, terminate the contract and go buy some decent players.
I've had enough.
And we end up bidding Robbie Mulhern off and signing James Gray. But no, on serious note, you know, let's see if you can guess the name what's been mentioned with the St. George job.
English or Aussie?
He's English, mate. He's English.
Sean Whitten?
Yeah.
See, I can buy that.
He's got an Australian agent.
Yeah. I can get that. I can buy
it. It's massive.
And I think for what St. George need, that's it'd be a great sign for St. They need a culture. So, like you said, they've got a lot of young kids and
I think they'll run it if Sean Wayne got appointed, but
yeah, see, I can see that working. I really can.
I can see it working, mate. But also, what I was laughing when I seen it. Us English have been screaming for an English who lives over here caught just to get the job.
And all see what they do, contract to go to Australia.
Sean Wayne signed for St. George. No one's watching Super League.
I'd like to see him stay beyond the 21 World Cup. You know, if he signs a deal in the NRL from 2022, then yeah, I can live with that. But
there goes your job,
for him to go over to Australia before that World Cup would be pretty damning on the English game, I think, because one thing that a lot of people mentioned about Wayne Bennett's problem with being an England coach is that he can't watch games, and you know, with only two games on Sky. And you know, beyond Sky, you need to be physically watching games.
The thing is, with that, Dan, obviously, the Wayne Bennett, you've got to look at it now. You're talking, Wayne Bennett's Australian, but he had English assistants. But I think with Sean Wayne, he's English, and obviously, he's got Paul Wellens, who's obviously at St. Helens, and we'll be watching Super League week in, week out. And I think Sean Wayne will put trust in Paul Wellens. And I don't think Sean Wayne is stupid enough not to watch any. But I think I'd love to see it, mate, because he's the most successful coach in Super League. He's won everything. There's nothing the man hasn't done. So I'd love to see it, but
yeah,
I think if you're a Wigan fan, would you fear? Because obviously a lot of Wigan players would buzz to play under Wayne again, and obviously you've got the John Bateman scenario now, and if he did get it, would John Bateman swerve to the Canterbury and go to St. George, and that could be massive for St. George, mate. That could be a massive appointment, but also a massive disappointment as well, because you're talking Sean Wayne, no experience in the highest league in the world, but yet the most successful coach over here, going in with a lot of young kids, and hopefully he has money to spend. If not, it could break him, really.
Yeah, it could, definitely. And another name that, you know, I'd like to see put in the frame, I don't know if he is over there at the minute, but he's obviously Craig Fitzgibbon. Now he's sort of the next cab off the rank as a coach. He's, you know, he's been assistant at, I think he's at Sydney Roosters at the minute, but he's obviously come from a Dragons background as a junior, and you know, whilst he's not had a head coach job yet, he's touted to give a good go of it, and obviously he was offered the whole job recently, but he's not that back, so you'd think that he's got something in the pipeline at some point in the NRL to turn Hull down. Would you go for him, Craig Fitzgibbon? You know, obviously he's a legend player, but can St. George afford to give a coach who's never head coach before the job? Do they need to go for an experienced coach? What do you think?
I don't know, mate. St. George is in the same pickle as Gold Coast. Gold Coast give it Justin Albrook, knowing what he'd done over here. So I think to give it him straight away, I think massive risk.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll look over in Super League and see what coaches are over here. Then.
Steve Price, possibly?
Steve Price? Nah, mate. He can't do it without money.
Adrian Lamb?
Another one, no. That's Steve Price, I'm smiling when I say this, Dan. The amount of money he's had at Warrington, he's won a Challenge Cup.
Yeah. I'll chuck a name out there. Ian Watson?
I can't see. I think it's too loyal. I think it's too loyal for Salford, mate. I think,
yeah. Do you know what? I agree with that. You get certain people. You get people you look at and go, great player, blah, 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 blah. But you get people who are just part of a club. And I think for me, Ian Watson is just part of Salford, isn't it?
You've just got to look at no further than our club, Paul Wellens. More than good enough to play in the RNL. Kevin Cunningham, more than good enough. Had offers. Nah. James Obi, another one. Had offers. Nah. Yeah, so it's not all about living on the beach, living in high life and whatever, but it's all about loyalty and if you really want to have a crack at it, because Ian Watson goes down there, that could absolutely break him. We're talking Ian Watson, who I said I wouldn't mind him at Saints when obviously Harbrook got announced that he left, but we got Christian Wolf in, and would Ian Watson, with forgetting what he's done with Salford, good, but it's a totally different ball game over there, mate.
It is.
The hardest league in the world, and it's a young team what St. George have got. But obviously, touching up there, Dan, you touched up on Hull FC. I'm just going to bring that into it now. Who do you think will end up getting the Hull job?
Andy Last, I think. Obviously, he's in the interim coach at the minute. He's highly thought of, so he's one of the assistants for Sean Wayne in England. I can see Andy Last getting it, and I know he's highly thought of. Beyond that, I don't know what Paul Cook's doing these days, but I know obviously he's done a bit of coaching in the past with Doncaster, I think he was head coach of, and obviously he's got contacts there and obviously a history at Hull FC. So Paul Cook, possibly.
I was thinking, mate, obviously, it's mad, mate, because the way they sat Lee Radford, I thought, was an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, straight from the game on
Sky. Not just that, mate. For what he'd done, probably respecting the man's name. He won back-to-back Challenge Cup for you. He won the first Challenge Cup Hull won at Wembley. And he basically got sat live and tell her. You know what I mean? Didn't get a chance to tell his wife, his family, with that.
Yeah.
I've been sacked. It was basically, after the game, we've come to mutual terms. If Hull struggle to get anyone, obviously, I was totally against Hull for what they'd done to Radford. I think if I'm Lee Radford now, I'd be sat there laughing, but obviously Lee Radford's not that type of person. What about Liam Price, Andy Last, and maybe Liam Price as his assistant? Because Liam Price has obviously started to go into the court.
He was
in the Championship, wasn't he? Was it Whitehaven, I think?
Yeah.
And obviously he's played at Hull as well. Maybe Sean Long could come back from rugby union.
Well, I was listening to Sean Long last night. He seems he wants to be at England as the offensive coach for England rugby union for the next World Cup. So
yeah.
I think he's sort of heart set on that for the next few years. Another name, obviously, you mentioned just there, Paul Wellings. Now, obviously, he's assistant at St. Helens. Oh, would you not?
No. No way. You can't say it well over from St. Helens. There's no way. Paul Wellings, for me, is unless it all goes tits up for Christian Wolf at Saints, I think you're talking Paul Wellings is the next Saints coach, possibly, in my eyes, 3 years down the line. Is it a 3-year contract to that Wolf? So I think 3 years is a long time. And if it's successful under Wolf, he's had 5.5 years of experience there with success, with obviously 2.5 of Holbrook. And then obviously if it's successful under Christian Wolf, he would have had 3 under him. I think it would be a no-brainer to appoint Kevin Paul as the coach, same time, which I'd love to see one day. But hey, oh, if another job comes up, mate, you don't know what's going to happen.
Another name, this is a bit left field, but I've got there's method behind the madness. Kieran Cunningham.
Kieran Patel.
What?
Kieran Patel.
Kieran Cunningham.
Yeah, but what about Kieran Patel and...
Well, Kieran Patel's already there. I think he's there at the assistant, so obviously he was at... So I think if he was going to get a job, he'd have had the job straight away instead of Andy Last. What about Kieran Cunningham?
Jack Owens, V Unite. I can't see it there. It'll be very surprised.
On a serious note, right, so I think a lot of people seem to think that when we had Kieran Cunningham, we was in a relegation battle. We wasn't. So he coached us for 2.5 years. The first 2 years, we finished fourth in the table both times, got to Challenge Cup semi-final on two occasions. It was only really the third year when he was sacked in April where we sat eighth in the table. He may not be, you know, well, he's definitely not a Justin Holbrook. He's not, you know, one of the best coaches in the world. But I don't think he's a terrible, terrible coach.
I'm not labelling Kieran terrible.
No, I know you're not. We've had this conversation in the past. Yeah, but
I just feel like I don't think Kieran's interested in it anymore. I'll be fair.
Yeah, he's not.
The Spartan business now and stuff like that. But what annoys me with Saints fans is it's obviously some of the stuff what got said about Kieran when he was at the court to Saints.
Oh mate, it's disgraceful. Disgraceful.
You think, hold on a minute. Put Cunningham. The name Cunningham is massive in Saints fans anyway. Put respect on that name for the staff, for what his brother's done for the club, for what he's done for St. Helens. You're talking about a world-class player, mate, who made number nine. He's the number nine jersey, he's at 18.
Yeah.
And then you had fans about the statue, and it's the wrong statue up there. And I think that statue's up there as him as a player and what he's done for this town. That statue is nothing to do with the coach. That statue's there for the player. But this is also what worries me now with, obviously, we mentioned well order and stuff like that going down the line. It just annoyed me that fans were actually looking at Kieran and thinking they basically forgot what he'd done for our club as a player.
Yeah, they have.
And basically, they're just going off 2.5 years. I think you just touched up there. 2.5 years, he was at Saints, and 2 years we got into the playoffs. We finished fourth twice, and the second year we got into the playoffs again and narrowly beat obviously Holbrook come in, but I think finishing fourth, I think teams have set it to Saints, give us that position then. We'll take your hands for that. I think Saints fans didn't realise what type of squad we had at the time. I think Saints were going through a regroup in players. Obviously we had the good players who got old and retired and moved on, and we got the young generation in, and obviously it was just basically you had your young Tommy Mason, you had your Luke Thompson, you had your Mark Persons. There wasn't really at the level they're at now, so it was always going to be slow for Kieran. And I think Kieran was just unlucky that he had the type of players. He never really had the experienced players within the squad, did he really? It was all young players ready to go. But then obviously it never worked for 2.5 years. He got the sack and then Holbrook come in and the players already had 2.5 years under the belt. So Holbrook, all he had to do was mature and build confidence in them players, and obviously that's what he'd done, and it was the best 2.5 years of our lives watching Saints under Holbrook. But I think Kieran made the treatment he got at Saints was I'll label that disgusting.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. I agree. I think it's been magnified, and you know, people have took it to an extraordinary level that he was this terrible coaching, and the fact is he wasn't. Players took a lot of responsibility for the way things went, and obviously we seen, you know, unfortunately for Kieran, we seen better either side of his sort of tenure in charge. But I don't think he's a terrible coach. You know, you can question his tactics and stuff, you know, by all means. But you know, for him to have a go at someone like Hull FC, who have got a great budget and possibly a bit more forgiving for a lesser expansive style of player, then it could be a good shot for him. But again, like you said, I don't think he'd go for it. I think he's happy where he is, isn't he?
I don't know about the budget, Dan, because they're crying poverty, aren't they, near enough every week?
Yeah, well, in fact, they were one of the teams that wanted to reject the salary cap thing, wasn't it? So, yeah, fair enough, man.
We spent all the money off-season and we'll cry poverty mid-season.
Oh. There is. Josh, just... Again, just one of my random things. I'm watching Canterbury and St. George from last week in the background here while we're talking. 18 minutes into the game, it goes to a behind screen shot, behind the stick shot, and there's a 2000 or 2001. There was St. Helens glass Saints tops with a thick red V. Remind you of David Furler?
Yeah,
just a single red. In the obviously you've got the fans that can send you a picture in. There's a Saints fan, so.
That's another thing as well. I'd love to see. Obviously, the cardboard cutouts where it is massive.
Yeah.
Obviously,
as long as it's not sending purple ack in.
Yeah, well, yeah, but you're going to get the odd dickhead out of you who's going to do
that. Owl shipment.
We will probably be the dickhead who try and attempt to. But what I'm trying to say is we text, and obviously the weekend, the Manly Seagulls game was on. And he made 210 grand off cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, exactly, so, yeah.
210 grand. Imagine how many of them would buy a drink as well while they're in there. The money it could create, mate. It's massive.
That should be an option, that, isn't it? So you should be able to send yourself in as a cardboard cutout to watch the game. Drop down box. How many pints do you normally sup at a game? Five, yeah. Boom, 10 are gone. Yeah. 10 of Christ, 20 quid at Saints.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Charge
Josh, quiz time. Pounds. What have we got, mate?
Oh, quiz time. Yeah. We have got 10 questions. Bit of a mixture. Like I said, Dan put me on my toes. I think he texted me at half six.
Yeah, sorry, mate. O'clock. Short notice this one.
Podcast at 8. I was like, right, off it. Birdies. Question number one is, what English club did Andrew Johns play for when he played in England? So question number one is, what English club did Andrew Johns play for when he was in England? Question number two, what team has won the most Super League Grand Finals? So that's, what club has won the most Super League Grand Finals? Question number three, what club did Mal Meninga coach from 1997 to 2001? Question number four, what English team did Stacey Jones play with in 2006-2007? Question number five, who did Wigan beat in the 2010 Grand Final? Question number six, who won the Young Player of the Year in 2003 in Super League? Question number seven, who won Super League Coach of the Year in 2012? Question number eight, who was the club of the year in 2014? Question number nine, who won the Harry Sunderland Trophy in 2010? And question number 10, what year did Stephen Ratchford join Warrington?
I think I know six.
Go on, man. Let's go on. Because we've not done this. We put pressure on people out there. So come on.
Go on. Let's do it. So go on. Number one was. Go on. Give us the question again.
What English club did Andrew Johns play for?
Oh, Warrington. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
Warrington.
Yeah. Number two. What team has won the most grand finals?
Leeds. I think it's eight. But Leeds,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it is. What club did Mal Meninga coach from 1997 to 2001? Come on, Dan. You watch the NRL.
Was it in Australia? I was going to say it was in Australia. Yeah. Mal Meninga.
Come on, Dan.
I'd have to say Canberra.
Yeah. I was just about to say, do you want to ring your mark? Question four. What English team did Stacey Jones play with in 2006 and 2007?
It's Catalan, wasn't it?
Yeah. Who did Wigan beat in the 2010 Grand Final?
St. Helens, 22-10. Sam Tompkins scored an absolute worldie of a try. Prick.
2010, Tompkins. Number six. Who won the Young Player of the Year in 2003?
I want to say Sean O'Loughlin.
No.
Who was it?
Gaz Hawk.
Right. I was thinking Wigan because they had that young team that year, didn't they?
Yeah. Number seven. Who won Coach of the Year in 2012? If you don't get this, I'll be disappointed.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, it weren't our coach because he got sacked, Roy Simmons.
Mick Potter.
Was it Mick Potter?
Yeah, Mick Potter, mate.
Bradford?
Or Catlon. I'm not too sure where he was, but it was Mick Potter. Brian Potter, Mick Potter. He was the club of the year in 2014. And I think if you don't get this, Dan, I think you're on the settee tonight.
And that's go Saints.
Witness.
Really?
I'm going to text it now.
Club of the year?
Yeah.
2014. Right. What did they do?
Must have finished eighth. I don't know.
Do you know what they did actually? It was the year where they got into the playoffs.
Must have beat Saints Wigan Warrington.
They were beating Warrington in the playoffs. And Hep Cale absolutely ended Brett Hodgson. Got 10 minutes, I think.
I knew that's why I put him in the underrated players.
Yeah. that was a good shout actually, mate.
You've not done too bad. Who won the Harry Sunderland in 2010?
10.
Got a shoulder like a sledgehammer.
Tommy Lutherway.
Yeah. Mate, I've never seen anyone with a shoulder like his.
That was it Fassa Blue in all 7. He just...
Alex Wormley last year, good friend.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah.
Wow.
The only upside to that was we scored on the next play. Why is that?
It's not an upside, is it? It's good for us. What a day that was. That was magic. Top out pints up for another
say what? They mentioned obviously some rugby, but that is what it was brought in for, wasn't it? It was 26 degrees, afternoon rugby of. The highest quality, and like you said, the 10 minutes before the end of the game, some fella asked me to mind his pint, and it found its way into my pint. Don't know how, can't remember.
That was ideal, that mate. It was 26 degrees,
gorgeous, wasn't it?
Played Wigan off the park, Regan Grace hat trick, Sean Edwards mask, beers were flowing, reserve seating went out the window. Away you go. Year after coronavirus. Question 10. What year did Ratchford join Warrington?
See, this is hard, this.
This is not hard.
I think it is. I'm thinking of who was the fullback before.
Brett Ogden?
I'm going to say 15 he joined.
2015?
Yeah? Was he not?
No. 2003. 2012?
Was it?
Yeah.
2012,
I know, to be fair.
I thought he spent longer at Salford, to be honest.
Well, I think he came through at Salford, didn't he? Or did he not?
Yeah, he came through at Salford. I think he's a Wigan lad. But
he's a Wigan lad.
He came through Salford Academy, didn't he?
For the last 10 years.
What did he get? Six, seven, something like that?
Yeah. For the last 10 years, he's been signing for Wigan. and it's never happened. But yeah, Don, that's yeah. The quiz, mate.
Good quiz, that.
Well, it is.
No, people answer it before I answer it. And,
well,
don't beat me. That's the intention.
How many did you get then?
I think six. So I got the
6 out of 10.
I got Mick Potter wrong, Ratchford.
We'll post it on the Twitter tonight.
Yeah.
And we'll put Dan versus Twitter.
Dan
versus Twitter, and then
Put the quiz out first. Yeah, put the quiz out first.
And let's see if anyone can beat that.
We'll put the podcast out tomorrow, and then that way they can see how terrible I am. What was good, obviously, you know, you're doing the quiz with us on Friday. Gemras won last week, and I'll put it to you now, see if you can do it. Jerry Stanley?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah? So name the last 10 Man of Steel winners.
Who won it last year?
I got it.
I'm going with Ben Barber.
It's hard, yeah. So work from last year backwards. So Hastings Barber.
I won't know year by year, but Hastings Barber.
Yeah.
Hastings Barber. Daddy Alton. He has won it, hasn't he, last 10 years?
He has, yeah.
Double five. Four. Yeah. Sam Tompkins.
Yeah.
Kevin Sinfield?
No.
I don't know, mate. That's a good question. Don't know, mate. Shall I come back to you on that?
I'll give you, right? Dead interesting. I got it, but it took me a while. So, it was 2010 with Pat Richards.
Yeah.
And that was it, worldy for Wigan. 11 was Rangi Chase at Cass.
Yeah, Rangi, bloody hell, where's he now, mate?
He killed it, yeah. 12 was Tompkins. 13 was Danny Brough, obviously the year that Huddersfield won the league.
Yeah.
14, Darrell Clark. As you mentioned there, 15 was Zach Hardacre. Killed it at Leeds. Absolutely killed it. That was the year they won the treble as well. 16, as you said, Danny Alton. You got 18 and 19 with Barber and Hastings. But 17 was Luke Gale, wasn't it?
Damn it, Luke Gale, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a good question, man. But...
The one that got me, it was doing my head in, was the Danny Brough one. Because you just forget Huddersfield
exists half a time. Oh, Daniel, everyone listens to this. I think, Gemma, if you listen, do us a favour, send a CV in, because I think I'm ready to hang my microphone up.
Quizmaster.
You just put me on toes and embarrass me in front of everyone. But yeah, like I said, Dan, it's been a good but different podcast this week, and
yeah.
I just want to touch up there before we wrap up. I know we've only done an hour and 15 now, but obviously I've seen it this week that the RFL are trying to get fans into the ground at a social distancing standards, and they're trying to say like 2 meters apart, which the World Health Organization say you only have to be a metre apart, and obviously our government is thinking on about reducing it to a metre and a half. So Super League clubs are on about every row of seats or something stupid like that. They could have fans, but how would that work? Because you've got season ticket holders, and obviously, if it's every other seat, you're not going to be able to get every season ticket holder into the ground.
Exactly, yeah.
But they are saying if you're from the same household, you can stand together. So, does that mean if you're from the same household, you can sit next to each other, and then it's just another row, and then someone
else? It'll
be interesting.
It'd be hard to police, wouldn't it? Now, obviously, it could only ever be members that get the goal, because there's no way on earth you could get all your members plus extra fans.
Yeah, but members, surely don't be able to get all the members in.
No chance. like I don't spend a lot of time going, like, so me and my son go watching Bolton Wanderers, and believe me, there's no problem getting tickets for them. But obviously, you know, you're an Everton fan. Lee's a Liverpool fan now. They obviously operate a ballot system. What?
I don't follow football.
But obviously, Lee's a Liverpool fan, and they operate a ballot system, don't they? So
Liverpool fans lie, mate. Liverpool fans,
could you, tell you, but could you go to that? A ballot of your members? Could you ballot your members to a random draw? I don't know. That's the only thing they could do, I think.
Leave it.
I agree. Get the cardboard cutouts, buying 4 pints of Foster's.
But mate, you know what? It that should be a choice. That should be, like, obviously, if you come to do the cardboard cutouts, that should be a choice of buying anything. Like, so you should have the option to pay for your cardboard cutouts at £15. Then it should have extras. So how much a pint of Foster's or can of Coke?
Yeah.
You put an extra four quid on top, and you know, because it's just going to generate money, mate. £210,000. It got made at the Manly Seagulls game. Do you think many Super League clubs turn that over?
No chance, mate. Not only that, you can obviously have it as a donation. You could go one further, and if you submit your cardboard cutout to Saints v Warrington, then the club have an alcohol license. You can go and get a takeout of 4 bottles of beer. And, you know, 4 bottles of beer to St. Helens will cost them £2, you know. Yeah, and they can charge you £15 or whatever they charge at the match. People would do it because, you know, it's that little bit of them at the game.
I just love it, mate. Like, even Saints Hall's what? I'm going to put you on your toes here, Dan. See how good you are at maths. Saints Hall's 18,000 seated stadium.
Yeah.
So £10, it's £180,000, isn't it? They're making £10
per
cutout. Or even if it's a fiver, obviously they're making half of that. Is it £75,000 they'll make?
£90,000, wasn't it?
£90,000.
Yeah.
So they'll make £90,000. Clubs like Saints probably made that anyway on a match day, but like you love clubs, you're Salford, I don't think they get 90 fans, you know what I mean? And I think if it comes to where you could use the cardboard cutouts, I think fans would buy into that.
It's a revenue maker, isn't it?
And
like you said, I'd be happy to pay, you know, 10-20 quid.
I'd buy it.
Purely just to give something to the club and feel part of it. You know, it's
when we hold the rugby club, mate,
and
when we go to the game, you know, we spend at least £50 each, £60 each.
Yeah.
You know,
we
have the pints, and then we stumble off to Gemma and Lee's car. My Gemma's sober. Two Gemma's in off for the Genos. We're going to Genos, spend £15. So you know what? Why not just go and buy 5 cardboard cutouts? There's me £50, what you'd normally get anyway. Away you go. But the only time we do it, mate, is away days. I'm not giving Wigan £50. No way. I'd rather see a DW enter.
Josh, you sound bitter, mate. Do you want to Wigan?
No. Not bitter, man. I'm not bitter. I just want my club to be survive. I don't want to see my club, but I want to see my club. If I can do anything, whatever I can do to help my club, I'll do that. And obviously, I'm not going to turn around and say, "Oh, look, we're going to have opened it away and no cardboard cutouts." And yeah, I would send cardboard cutouts. I'd send me Wigan, my brother in a Saints top, who's now a Wigan fan. Behind the sticks at the DW on his own. Where he sat in the other stand with his wig and top on. Turn call. For the years. But yeah, mate, I'm just going off topic now. I think we're going to end up boring people. But like I say, I've enjoyed it again tonight, Dan.
Myself, Josh, yeah, I like your quiz as well, mate. Well, I think next time I'll quiz you.
No, hold on, you can't. You can't take the quiz off me now. The quiz is mine, mate. That was just off the cuff, should we say. This podcast has been off the cuff. It's probably been our best one. We had Stuart for 15 minutes. And we've had us for an hour and 15 talking absolutely shite.
Yeah. But it's good, mate. Like you said, there's no rugby to watch, so.
No. And hopefully we're back up and running and we get to see 5 drives and a kick and not in a couple more weeks.
Bring back Holbrook.
Well, I don't think that's happening now, mate. They've just given him a 6-year deal. They just won the first game in 12 months.
I know.
10-year contract on the table.
Just before we do go, obviously, you know, big thanks to Stuart Fielding. Like I said, we messaged Josh at 6 o'clock. I think I messaged Stuart about 7:30. So, yeah, big thanks to him for coming on at such short notice to speak on Maguire. Next week, Josh, I've not even told you this yet, we're going to be speaking to Greg McNally. He's sort of wanted to come on a couple of weeks back, but obviously we've not done it for a couple of weeks, so he's going to pop on and we're going to get him on for next week. Obviously, Lee fullback, great player. And what I want to speak to Greg McNally about is obviously the championship and his sort of thoughts and how they can create revenue. Obviously, for Super League, there's the potential of a pay-per-view match for all games to go on Sky for a small fee, or Sky possibly covering all games. It's a bit different for Championship, and I want to get an understanding as to you know what they think they can do. So that'll be interesting. And I'm going to try and get a couple of other Championship players and hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, Andy Mazer or someone like that from Swinton. You know, he works behind the scenes on the board at Rochdale now, of course, Andy Mazer. So we'll try and get someone like that on to get an understanding of, you know, what the clubs are doing in the background to create revenue. So, next week should be good, Josh.
Yeah, obviously, we'll save it for next week. I won't go into too much detail now, but an article about Featherstone's been released and they are worried. They're basically trying to say now the delay of Super League is purposely doing it so the Championship can't get up and running, which... If that's the case, mate, I think it's absolutely appalling, to be fair. Yeah.
I'll have a read of it. I've not seen it, mate.
I'll see if I can find it. I'll obviously send it over to you. But
Yeah. We'll post it. If we do find it, we'll post it on the Twitter as well.
Yeah, definitely, mate. I think if that's what's happening, I think it's absolutely appalling, like I said to you.
Yeah, 100%. That's not good, is it? We want the game to pick up altogether.
Definitely. One hole. I just want rugby back, mate. You know what I mean? It's back in Australia.
Yeah.
In Australia, they're on about fans this week. As much as I love my rugby, Dan, I would not be asked if I never seen a game of rugby in front of my eyes physically this year. I just want rugby back. I want it up and running.
Yeah.
Let the players be safe. Let the staff be safe. And if that means come January next year, only 3,000 fans can go in. Only 3,000 fans can go in. You know what I mean? Just got to abide by the rules and hopefully this disaster's over soon.
Yeah, and like you said, well, it does seem like we're getting on the right side of it now. So, if not this year, then so be it. And next year we go again, don't we? Like you said, mate.
Yeah, I'd rather write this off this year anyway, mate, I think.
Yeah, let's just get a load of games on Sky and
a
few beers and go with that. I think.
Yeah, let's all go over Ruskin and abuse Ruskin's take.
Ruskin drive.
Yeah.
The saviors.
The saviors, mate.
But Josh, again, you know, really appreciate your time, mate, and thanks for listening. Obviously, like I said, we'll get one up next week, and we'll focus more on the Championship next week. So give us a listen again, like and subscribe it on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, however you listen to us, and we'll be back with you next week, Josh. Yeah,
that's fine, mate.